Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, the world's most exciting podcast, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, New York Times best-selling author and National Radio Hall of Fame inductee, Michael Savage.
I'm so tired of reading about COVID, vaccines, drugs, China, beaches, Governor Newsom's. You're going to die from it. You're not going to die from it. It's a hoax. It's not a hoax. I'm sick of it. I want out of this. Don't you want out of this? Don't you want out of this nightmare that we're all in? Well, you're not going to get out of it too soon. Would you take a COVID vaccine if they come up with it? I wouldn't. I would retreat to the hills and join a militia before I would take a COVID vaccine. And I'll tell you why. You know, I asked that yesterday. I went back on Twitter. I figured the trolls would have died by now, but of course I don't read it anymore. Others now read it. I just post, let the others read it. I posted something simple. COVID vaccine, I will refuse to take it. It will be ineffective and dangerous. There are now 20 to 30 known mutations. I have never taken a flu shot, and I will refuse to take a COVID vaccine. I said, if the government makes it mandatory, what would you do? Well, I received a very enormous, a huge, huge, huge reply and response. One of the highest response rates of all of my tweets for years now. And I can ask you the same thing. And I was going to talk about the difference between a vaccine and a drug. I mean, you're hearing a lot about remdesivir, right? Listen to me, folks. The drug failed its trials about a week and a half ago. Then suddenly it's approved by the FDA. How did that happen? How did remdesivir, an experimental drug that appears to help some elderly coronavirus patients recover faster? Yeah, well, so would sunlight, so would a vitamin C pill, so would vitamin A. Appears to help some coronavirus patients, could bank upwards of $2 billion for the treatment, according to a new report. It's going to cost about $4,500 a dose, and Uncle Donald will pay for it. Who's going to pay for it? You? Gilead Sciences has not released its pricing information for its antiviral medication, which is typically used to treat Ebola. The company announced it will donate its current supply. The drug reported support about 140,000 cases. The FDA greenlighted the drug's use in hospitalized patients just last week, but a week before it had been, the trial failed. Now all of a sudden, bing, there it is. What should I believe here? That it's a miracle drug? Now they're talking about a vaccine. You know what I know if you look into vaccines. I don't even want to talk about this. That's what I'm saying. I wanted instead to talk to you about my years of travels in the South Pacific. I wanted to read you an old story I wrote in 1982 called Leo Loeb's Paradise. No, I swear to you, I was going to read you an old story. I'm thinking of putting it on Kindle for like $2.95. Here's why I'm going to take some of my old stories from my travels in the South Pacific and publish them on Kindle for like $2-$3. Because I told you when I was a little boy, young boy, working in my father's antique store, I would find barrels and barrels and barrels of discarded manuscripts, music scores, photographs in these huge old wine barrels. Now, I was in the basement to clean bronzes with cyanide solution, you see. But I was a dreaming kind of kid. I was a dreamer. And my father would yell down, "Michael, what are you doing down there? Are you working?" "Yes, Dad, I'm working away. My eyes are red. You can come and check and see my skin turn red from the cyanide solution." But I wasn't working half the time. I was rifling through the barrels where they would throw away the manuscripts, the photographs, the music scores. And I'll tell you how that happened. You see, my father was poor, and the men in the other little stalls there were also poor. And there was a thing called subway auctions in those days. Today, a subway auction would be nothing. Who leaves anything on a subway? In those days, a subway auction, they would sell unopened suitcases and trunks. that had been left behind or lost and found. And the locks had not been broken into because nobody would have bought them. They figured the guys would have gone through it for the valuables. So the poor merchants would bid on the suitcase or the trunk based on what it looked like in quality, you know, $5, $10. And then they would bring it back into this marketplace that they had on Ludlow Street in Manhattan. And they'd break the lock open. I'd be there as a little kid. It was really amazing fun to be there late at night. And the men would break open their buy, you know, whatever they bought. And you'd hear one yell out, "Hey, look what I found in mine. Look what I found in mine." You know, they'd rifle through it looking for something of value, silver, gold, whatever. But they'd throw away all of the, quote, non-essential stuff in the suitcases, which were the manuscripts, the music scores, and the photographs. Being a dreamer as I was, I'd be downstairs looking through the throwaways. And I'd read stuff that you couldn't believe. No one's ever seen it. And you see pictures of the guy waving goodbye on the west side of Manhattan, taking off on a ship to Europe, to his big trip to Europe. He was going to be a composer, a big famous composer. And he died or something, came back a broken man, and all he had were his photographs and his manuscripts. I found that to be the essence of the man. So now I am stuck in my life with manuscripts that have not been published. Some of them are damn good. Actually, some of them are better than anything I've ever published. So what am I going to do with them? Throw them in a garbage can? Don't call me about China, please. I don't really give a damn. I know you've all listened to Rush Limbaugh and you're ready to go to war. There's a recruiting station down the street. Why the hell are the conservatives starting to stir up a war with China? Men who are never going to fight in the war, men who have one foot in the grave, they're starting to stir up morons to go to war with China. I never heard anything like this. Oh, the Chi-Coms did this. The Chi-Coms did that. We got to go to bomb China. Bomb China. Leave me out of it if you don't mind. Go enlist. Go bomb China. So as I was saying, I have all these manuscripts, and I was reading one of them yesterday. Leo Loeb. It's so good. I realized my writing was better in the 80s than it is now because I was writing pure fiction. But I'm not going to read it to you. I have the manuscript now with all the rejection letters, pocketbooks, July 1987. I'm returning here with you. Does anyone out there a writer? Anyone listening to the show a writer know what the hell I'm even talking about? July 9th, 1987. Dear Michael, I'm returning here with your proposal. Thanks for letting me see it. The story and the characters are quite interesting, and your writing is at times very funny. I think, however, that the book would be a tough sell as an original paperback. Thanks again, and best of luck. Signed, Linda from... I remember all these wonderful editors I used to work with. All I wanted were my nutrition books and my herbal books. That's okay. I'm not complaining. Of course, the times they are changing. Would you rather I talk about Anthony Fauci, Governor Gretchen Whitmer, the difference between a vaccine and a drug, who's a worse leftist, Cuomo or Newsom, how the pandemic is affecting real estate, is it affecting your faith, you still believe in God, things like that. I can do it. I have it all ready to go. I can talk about it if you'd like. I've been in the epidemiology, immunology area of study for many years. My mind has always been on this epidemic, not exactly this one, but something was going to come up. In fact, if you listen to my show regularly, if you remember last November or December, someone just reminded me of it, a very important man in the media. He said, "Michael, you went on the air last November or December in 2019 and said something terrible was going to hit the earth in early 2020 in the first quarter." I said, "I remember. I didn't think it would be a meteor, but I felt things were too hot, too high, and I knew that whatever goes up must come down. I knew this had to end, and it ended. It ended. The worst thing we have lost with this virus is our liberty and our independence. We have seen what these communist governors are capable of, and you've seen nothing yet. This is just a test trial, a warm-up for what they'll do to you if they really get away with this." So I respect all those who are rebelling against Governor Newsom and rebelling against the other fascistic governors out there who've overstepped their powers. Now, don't get me wrong. I've said from the beginning, this is a serious virus. It can kill. It is serious and it can kill. But I also said selective quarantines. Quarantine those groups at risk. I knew who they were. And you had to quarantine them, let everyone else live. But no, it was a one-size-fits-all equation that was used by these mini brains. And you saw what's inside of them. I know someone who's a Democrat who's going broke because of this. He said, I'll never vote for Newsom again. Never. Because I saw how much he enjoyed the power madness. The power madness. He was enjoying it too much. And how vindictive he got. Closed all the beaches, opened them all up except Orange County, a Republican stronghold. This is politics? This is not, my friends. So again, I could do that. I could read from my story. I could talk about the protein spike on the target region for a vaccine. You want me to talk about the protein spike on the target region of the vaccine? I don't think so. So just be, you want a health passport. Maybe you'd like to talk about a health passport. They had them in Nazi Germany, I think. Jews need not apply. The Jews didn't qualify for a health passport in Nazi Germany. Coronavirus UK, health passports possible in months. Well, Britain has always been a crypto-fascist. Tech firms are in talks with ministers about creating health passports to help Britons return safely to work using coronavirus testing and facial recognition. And you see, you'll get a digital certificate from the government, also known as an immunity passport. And it'll prove which workers have had COVID-19 as a way of easing the impact on the economy and businesses from ongoing physical distancing, even after current lockdown measures are erased. Isn't that nice? The UK-based fascist firm, Blank, which specializes in verifying people's identities using facial biometrics. Of course, they don't use it on the grooming gangs from Pakistan who are grooming girls by raping them. They use it on all of the other people in the country, has delivered detailed plans to the government and involved in a number of conversations about what could be rolled out across the country if understood. And so they're going to use technology to record your face, take a selfie, passport, and if it matches you, they'll test you for corona. And if you're clean, you get an immunity passport. If not, you go to the right. You go to the right. You don't go to work. You know, that's what we're living through. And by the way, I don't know where this ends in this country. New York, rogue cops from the NYPD tasered, beat, and arrested citizens for not social distancing. They've gone from New York's finest to New York's swinest under communist de Blasio. I never saw anything like this. I put it on Twitter. Watch rogue NYPD cops beat and arrest people for not social distancing. And it was black people, by the way, they were beating, incidentally. Oh, yeah. Somehow only the blacks were not social distancing. And did they get beaten badly. I never saw such a overreaction in my life. Remember when that big guy, Eric Garner, I remember his name, was taken down by the fascist cops in Brooklyn and choked to death? And I saw him on the ground screaming, I can't breathe. And the fascist cops with weightlifter arms like a python kept choking him till he died. Do you remember whose side I was on? I wasn't on the side of the python arm. I called him a Nazi who should go to jail. I know many of you attacked me and said, no, he's just doing his job. What was his job? Killing a guy for selling cigarettes? That was his job? That was his job, killing a guy for selling cigarettes while crack dealers ran free up there. You know, it's crazy. The world's gone upside down. But did you ever think your hero cops would now become the brown shirts of our time, beating people up and arresting them for not social distancing? Wait until you see what comes next from your lovely, lovely, peaceful, peace-loving, liberal governors right here in the good old USA.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
The Savage Nation. It's Savage on Demand.
Look, it's no surprise that what's going on in the world might be contributing to more stress and sleep deprivation. Let Ebb help. Ebb Sleep is a wearable solution that fits over the forehead and gently and precisely cools the forehead to reduce those racing thoughts, to allow people who are suffering from sleeplessness drift more comfortably into a deeper, more restorative sleep. Ebb is clinically validated, and 4 out of 5 users report falling asleep faster and improving overall sleep quality. Ebb Sleep understands the uncertainty you may be experiencing at this time and wants to help. Now, does it really work? Robert, one of my producers, has been using Ebb Sleep for a few weeks. He's noticed a dramatic change in his sleep. He's falling asleep faster and waking up feeling more rested than he has in years. He's even acting nicer to me. It's got to be that EBB Sleep understands the uncertainty you may be experiencing at this time and wants to help. Our listeners can save $25 off what you order by using... My listeners can save $25 off their order by using promo code SAVAGE to save. And then continue to try Ebb risk-free for 60 nights to confirm it's the solution you've been looking for at tryebb.com/savage. I got to spell it for you because I want you to try it. tryebb.com/savage. tryebb.com/savage. Why don't you let us help you get the sleep you need and remove the risk from your purchase? You win all around. That's tryebb.com/savage. tryebb.com/savage. Promo code SAVAGE to save. Would you please order today and get that night's sleep you've been looking for? With everything going on, get the sleep you need and you deserve. tryebb.com/savage. Trust Robert. He went to tryebb.com/savage, and I can tell you, it's really helping him. It will help you. Just go to tryebb.com/savage.
There are everyday actions to help prevent the spread of respiratory diseases. Wash your hands. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth. Stay home when you are sick. Cover your cough or sneeze. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects with household cleaning spray. For more information, visit cdc.gov/COVID-19.
Furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters and this podcast.
You know, you think about islanders. I've spent so many years when I was younger in these islands. I mean remote islands, thousands of miles from a main landmass. Remote islands that you haven't been to. Don't tell me you've been there. You haven't been to the Marquesas. It's not a tourist destination, thank God. Oh, the people are not yet destroyed by you. The big fat cruise ships can't come in there and dump their toxic garbage and turn the people into Disney characters, happy islanders playing ukuleles for them on the shore and turning their daughters into prostitutes at night. No, it didn't happen there because it's too remote, too far away from a landmass, you see, thousands of miles from the United States, the Marquesas. And anyway, it's a long story. It's an interesting story from the point of view of an epidemiology because the Marquesas are so isolated, you would think that they wouldn't have been decimated by smallpox, but they were. Sailors came in from Europe, whalers, brought their wonderful diseases with them. And the island population went from, I don't know what it was, probably hundreds of thousands. And at the end of the epidemic, there were about 20,000 islanders left. It just wiped them out because they had no natural resistance to this disease. Sound familiar to you about epidemics? They fascinated me for many, many years, which is why I've studied them for many, many years and why I'm interested in this one. Now, fortunately, this one has a very low mortality rate. Oh, yes. Very low mortality rate. It can wipe you out, knock you down, kill you if you have underlying conditions. Definitely decimates the elderly and those with serious underlying conditions, which is a whole story unto itself. But by and large, the general population would get the equivalent of a flu for a couple of weeks and leave them a little wiped out. And that would be it. And you'd get what's called herd immunity, which you've heard a lot about. Of course, I'm not seeing much about herd mentality or herd thinking, which is, of course, all we see in America today, especially here in the San Francisco area. It's all herd mentality. You know, have to think a certain way, don't you? All of the good, wild, crazy liberals. That's an example of herd mentality. But I'm getting far afield now. I told you about working in my father's store and finding the discarded manuscripts. Does anyone know what a manuscript is these days? Does anyone handwrite? All of my manuscripts were handwritten in beautiful cursive. Actually, they're an art form unto themselves when you think about it. Kids are not even taught how to write today. If you ask someone to write 1,000 words cursively, I'll forget about it. So my character, the novel is going to be called Leo Loeb's Paradise or Escape from H-Bomb Island. It was written in 1982 or 84, and I'm putting it up on Kindle in the next few weeks. Should I? Yes or no? You want me to read a page or two? Yes or no?
Michael Savage, a host like no other.
Okay, you know I'm a car guy. You know I've had a Hellcat. And with the ever-increasing numbers of cars like Dodge, BMW, and Volkswagen, and models like the Hellcat, X3, and Jetta, it's now impossible to stock all the parts you need in a traditional chain storefront. We all know that. I'm a car guy, and I'm telling you, why endure often pointless or seemingly intimidating questioning and wait while a counterman orders the parts on his computer, choosing the only brand his warehouse happens to carry? You have computers with access to rockauto.com right in your home and in your pocket. One reason to repair and maintain your cars is to save money that you could then use for other important things like the mortgage or food. Why would you choose to spend 30%, 50%, 100% more for the exact same auto parts in a chain store or a new car dealership when you could do it at home on your own computer? Now, you may not know this, but chain stores have different price tiers for professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfers. RockAuto.com's prices are the same for everybody, and reliably low they are. RockAuto.com always offers the lowest prices possible rather than changing prices based on what the market will bear like airlines do. RockAuto.com is for everybody and does not require membership or account login. Does not require this. You could just do it yourself. RockAuto.com is a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Just go to RockAuto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. They have everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, even new carpet sets. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks, delivered right to your door. The RockAuto.com catalog is unique and remarkably easy to navigate. You can quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brands, specifications, and prices you prefer. But best of all, prices at RockAuto.com are always reliably low and the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Go to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write SAVAGE in their How Did You Hear About Us box so they know we sent you. That's SAVAGE. They have an amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Don't stand online in an auto parts store and wait for the hostile clerk to get back to you. Go to rockauto.com.
All the parts your car will ever need.
Rock Auto.
All the parts your car will ever need.
Rockauto.com.
First of all, you cokeheads out there who can't get through the morning, I can imagine the drug use must be off the charts. People are so bored, locked up like animals in a pen. I'm lucky. I got my radio show. I do it out of my home studios. I realize that. I love all of these guys now. They're doing it from home. They don't even know how to dress. They don't have to put on an outfit at home. I mean, we all know your home. Look at the fake studios they're all creating with, like, fake books they never read behind them. Don't you love that? All of the newsmen with the fake libraries behind them. Like who picks the statue they put up, like, of an elephant? Put up something neutral so no one thinks you have an opinion on anything. I don't know. Look, I'm looking back on my life, and I suppose if I had had the chance, I'd have chosen to be an RAF pilot on a hopeless mission, you know, dying in flames after destroying my Nazi target. But choices being what they are, my slim pickings in life drove me here, right to radio. Like a bull in a pen, a series of boards opened. You run, stampede, really, anywhere, anything that's open, that's not shut. I know it's a second-rate analogy, I get that. But what can I say to you? Now, people say that I'm a nihilist, but I'm not. People confuse nihilistic behavior with suicidal behavior. I'm not suicidal, nor nihilistic. The nihilists choose to deny not life, but society. The suicides choose to deny life for reasons not understood. Is it biological, psychological? I'm just musing. Do you understand what I'm doing right now? Am I allowed to just muse on the radio, or would you like me to stick to the one- or two-dimensional radio show that you're used to? Whatever you want. Vaccines, drugs, epidemiology, dying and death, lockdowns, lockups, motorboating, unmotorboating, Fauci, Schmauci, Whitmer, Schmittmer, Trump, Whitmer, Whitmer, Trump, Democrat, Republican, global race to a COVID vaccine, all aboard, all aboard. Or if you want me to read a page or two from my forthcoming Kindle edition, because I'm not going to let it, look, what are my kids going to do with my manuscripts? They're not going to be able to publish them. If they even find them, they won't even throw them away. They'll probably just throw them into an incinerator. I don't know. What should I do with these things? So I'm going to put it on Kindle. I've decided anything that I think is worth publishing from the early days of the Savage archives, I'm going to publish. Now, right now, I have three Kindle editions. I'm not getting rich from it. I'm not peddling a book. It's for your entertainment. It's inexpensive. That's why I love Kindle. And there's a second reason. Publishing is going to be largely, I hate to say it, it's going to be a different industry. If you're a writer, I don't know how publishing survives after this, right? What? How are they going to survive after this? A publisher. Magazines, they're not even carrying them in Barnes & Noble. And I love the magazine racks there. I hate the people who read for free. I want to hit them over the head with a cappuccino. See the old white guys here from Marin County soiling the magazines with their spittle in their cap. They don't even buy the cappuccino in Barnes & Noble. They bring a drink in from home. Spill it on the magazine. If I go to buy a magazine, I want you just see the ones thumb through. I don't buy those. You go to the back. Well, anyway, even the magazines are gone. I'm one of those guys that refuses to like read for free. Well, now no magazines. And what about books? What, only him? Jeff Bezos again? The only publisher? I never saw anything like it. Government and Amazon. It's like one giant company. Amazon Inc. How can one company become so big without being investigated for antitrust activity? I'll never understand it. I know I shouldn't say it because he could take my books off Kindle. He can throw my books off his bookstore. Well, that's exactly why you should look into the antitrust aspects of Amazon. Don't you get it? They already drove Borders out of business. More than one bookstore chain in the country called Government Bookstore, Government Airlines, Government Cruise Lines, Government Agriculture, Government Cows, Government Vaccine. Maybe the government could give you a child because they can't leave it to you. They could select which people should have children. And of course, if you're Anderson Cooper, you can get a child. Don't you love that story about Anderson Cooper last week? Oh, he had a child. The first child born on the planet. Anderson Cooper's surrogate child. Well, I wish him and the child all the luck in the world, but I didn't really give a damn. You see, all of us have had children a long time, and we didn't consider it the Immaculate Conception because we had a child, Andy. You narcissistic pig, you. Get back to me when the kid is 15 and finds out what a person you really like. Anyway, I don't want to be mean to him. I don't even want to even think about him. Asian hornets, someone's calling about. I don't care about Asian hornets. You know, it's interesting to me. How'd the Asian hornet get here at the same time COVID came from China? I just love this. It's interesting. You got the Wuhan virus wiping out the whole world. Then you got the Asian hornets now wiping out honeybees. Don't you love that? How does this happen? It's all by accident, probably. Well, it's an interconnected world, you see. No borders, no language, no culture. Just a polyglot of ugly dungarees and bad sneakers with ersatz music and no literature. That's the world we're living in. Let me take a caller or two because you don't want me to read from Leo Love's Paradise. I probably will in the next minute or two. And then you'll see why I'm going to publish it. Should I do it or not? No, then you'll flood the board. All right, let me take a caller on the virus. Roger in Salem, Oregon. Roger, welcome. What's on your mind?
Hey, Michael, I know your background in epidemiology, and I had a question or your thoughts of why do you think the United States has been hit so much harder than other countries in the world?
I think I have the answer for that because we have a very unhealthy population.
Is that why? Okay.
I do think so, yes. In fact, if you look at the individuals who are getting hit the hardest or dying from the virus, almost all of them have underlying conditions. And America, by and large, is a very, very obese, diabetic nation. And America is a very weak nation. It's not a healthy nation. You know, you see fitness stories and the guys with the abs and all. I don't think they're that healthy, by the way. What do you think? Because a guy is thin and you could see his abs, he's healthy? He may not be with the garbage he's putting into his body and what he's not eating.
Yeah,
but they're not the ones who are dying from it. It's basically obese people, underlying conditions, obesity, diabetes, and you name it. In fact, there's an interesting soundbite because Will Smith, the actor, asked Fauci or Slouchy why the coronavirus disproportionately affects African Americans, which I thought was a very interesting question. And of course, the immediate knee-jerk answer for the morons is racism. But it's not racism. Listen to the answer in clip one.
As is all situations associated with the disparities of health in minorities, particularly the African-American community. And it's really terrible because it's just one of the failings of our society is that African-Americans have a disproportionate prevalence and incidence of the very comorbid conditions that put you at high risk.
Hypertension, asthma,
obesity, diabetes. If you get infected, you're going to have a poor outcome. When it's all over, is to focus a bright, shining light.
All right, stop with the bright, shining. All right, it's enough already. Get the pharmacy delivery boy off the show. So there's your answer. Does that answer the question, I think, a little bit?
It does. I mean, it's very straightforward. Thank you very much.
That's all. See, I can combine it. It's a combo job today. It's a mixture of all of the disparate elements of my soul that are now, like, rising to the surface of my being. I can't just sit here and talk about the epidemic stuff. How many of you out there, okay, here's another call on something to do with the disease. Let's do that, then I'll clear the decks for the next thing. Hey, whatever happened to the guy from Brooklyn? What was his name? The Italian guy used to call all the time. Where is he? Jimmy from Brooklyn. Is he not listening anymore? Remember his cousin died of COVID and he was depressed? And then he never called the show again. I hope he didn't get sick. What if Jimmy went under from too much Italian food there in Staten Island? Staten Island, Chuck Line 3, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Mike.
Yes, sir. What's on your mind?
With 26 million subscribers and listeners, you can use any...
Well, it's not 26 million. It's in the millions, but okay. What's on your mind, Chuck?
A couple of weeks ago, I take as many supplements as you do.
And good.
A couple of weeks ago, you mentioned not taking vitamin D. Well, I wanted to give you a heads up on something because there was a...
Hold on. Let me say something. Let me give a caveat to the audience. I said, if you have an immune response, if you have an immunological problem, don't take vitamin D. That's what I said.
Well, there was
in other words, if you have an autoimmune disease or you are immune compromised in any way, do not take vitamin D. That's what I said.
Okay.
I didn't say generally you shouldn't take it.
Well, the article in the Post the other day, I want to give you a heads up on it, because the researchers at Queen Elizabeth Hospital Foundation in East Anglia said that the deaths in 20 different countries in Europe were directly related to having low vitamin D levels. And
hold on, please, but you have to look at those who died and see whether they had underlying conditions to begin with.
Just passing along the article.
No, I get it. But you see, this is the problem with an epidemiological study. Unless you break it down and go into the really specific details, it isn't necessarily what the headline is saying.
Well, give the caller a second ago that you answered, you know what the BCG vaccine is.
So?
You don't? It was the one that was given...
No, I said so.
Huh?
What are you getting at now?
Well... My wife was given it as a kid in America, but it's not given in North America, but it's given to the rest of the world. And apparently it has a direct protective relationship with the coronavirus as well as TB.
So you're arguing in favor of a vaccine?
No. This is given years ago and all around the world for TB. It just coincidentally...
And you're saying those who got the vaccine have a lower incidence of this disease, COVID?
Apparently, that's what they found. That's one of the reasons why Europeans and Asians around the world aren't dying in the quantity that the Americans are.
They all got the vaccine?
Yeah, because they got TB. In North America, it hasn't been given since the 60s. My wife got it years ago as a kid.
Why did she get it?
You know, we haven't found that out. It was given...
Wait, is she from Asia?
No, no, that's the point. She's from Queens. And in 1960, 61...
All right, I got the story. I got. So if you get the TB vaccine, you get a little bit of a resistance against the COVID, is what you're saying. All right. I still haven't read a page from my novel. Can I do that, please? No. No one wants to hear it. I got a very straight audience. Don't screw around. I just stick to the subject. Vaccine. The only one here is vaccine, drug, epidemic, pandemic, Newsom, drugs. That's all. Don't read that crap you wrote in the 80s, Savage. We don't want to hear it anymore. No more. No more art, science, poetry, literature. Just stick to the one-dimensional stuff. Do the one-dimensional banjo. Come on, let me read a piece of the... I won't read it. I'll be back to do something else.
The Savage Nation. It's savage, uncut, unfiltered, and raw.
I don't know. What can I say to you? What can I say? So what am I reading during this lockdown? You know what I found I'm doing is I'm reading, like, serious novels again. I'm reading Herman Woke, The Lawgiver, about Moses, the making of a movie about Moses, which never gets made. The great Herman Woke lived to, like, 103. He wrote some great, great Marjorie Morningstar, The Caine Mutiny, The Winds of War. Great writer. How could you forget The Caine Mutiny? So I'm reading The Lawgiver. It's pretty interesting. Set in L.A. with imaginary letters back and forth. And then I'm reading The Knife, The Big Knife by Clifford Odets, one of the great playwrights of all time, screenwriter, director. And if you don't know who he was, Clifford Odets was such an inspiring writer that the next generations of playwrights followed him. Arthur Miller, Patty Chayefsky, Neil Simon, and even David Mamet, who I interviewed on this radio show a while ago. I'm sure David Mamet would know who he is. But the book, The Big Knife, is amazing. It's an amazing story. And it's funny what happens when you start reading serious literature again. Your mind gets better. Your mind gets taken out of the ordinary. You're not sitting here listening to the gibberish and to the governors. You just go somewhere else. You know what I'm saying? I'll be back to tell you what I'm saying.
The Westwood One Podcast Network. Fans of the spoken word, welcome. This is a podcast. Greetings, pod recipients. You are entering the Savage Nation. Read the book. See the movie. Warning, The Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, the world's most exciting podcast, The Savage Nation, home of borders, language, culture. And here he is, New York Times best-selling author and National Radio Hall of Fame inductee, Michael Savage.
Here we are. And no, I don't want to talk about would you take a COVID vaccine, because I won't. I told you, I put it on Twitter. I went back on Twitter, let the trolls go where they belong, which is back to hell. And I tweeted something that got me mad, because they're all talking about a COVID vaccine. And I know, having studied these things, having studied the flu vaccines, which are about 30 to 40, maybe 40% effective, number one. Number two, if you look at flu vaccines as in the background, not only are they ineffective, 37% to 50% is what we're seeing in reports, but there are huge side effects to flu vaccines. That's number two. Okay, so now they're telling us they're going to rush a COVID vaccine when we know there have been 20 to 30 mutations of this virus already. And I'm very, very concerned that they're rushing out a vaccine that will be dangerous, ineffective, et cetera. So I said, I said this COVID vaccine, I will refuse to take it. It will be ineffective and dangerous. There are now 20 known mutations. It's actually 30. I have never taken a flu shot, and I will refuse to take a COVID vaccine. If the government makes it, quote, mandatory, what would you do? The response has been overwhelming at A Savage Nation. Huge response to that one, because I know it's a sore point. And if these fascistic, quote, liberal governors think they have a problem on their hands that they're making believe will go away with the shutdowns, wait until they try to tell you you must have a vaccine to leave your house. I would join a militia before I took a vaccine. I go to the hills. I'm not taking it. I refuse. And I don't care who tells me I have to take it. I don't care if Donald Trump says I have to take it. I'm not taking it. Did you hear me? I'm not taking it for Jesus. I'm not taking it for Trump. I'm not taking it for Moses. I'm not taking it for Isaiah. I'm not taking it for Muhammad. I'm not taking it for Charlie Parker. I'm just not taking it. That's the end of it. Wait until you see that day come. You know, it's funny. It goes all the way back to my founding of the Paul Revere Society in 1994. When I started in radio, I created the Paul Revere Society, and I put out a little card. Some of you still have these collectible cards, Paul Revere Society membership cards. If you look on it, the back of it stands for Borders, Language, Culture, but it also says, we will refuse a mandatory AIDS vaccine. I don't know if you know that, but I've been telling you the same thing for 25 years. You may not like me, or you may love me, but I'll tell you one thing about me is I'm very consistent in my messaging. I don't change with the wind. No, Siri Bob, no mandatory vaccines for me. And I say, well, how do you get out of it? Well, there's probably religious exemptions and whatnot we could look into, but let's not go there yet. We've got an overwhelming response to my suggestion that I read from Leo Loeb's Paradise. I'm going to read only a page or two, and I'm going to give you a taste of what I'm going to put on Kindle. It's going to be very inexpensive, like $1.95, and I'm putting it up so it doesn't get burned after I drop dead and go to the next world, whenever that may be, hopefully later rather than sooner. And I don't want it lost. I mean, you know, what's beautiful about Kindle is I can post a thing, and there it is. I don't have to go to a publisher and get a rejection letter. I don't have to beg them to publish it. And I have enough of an audience. It'll sell a few thousand copies or whatever. I don't care if it sells anymore. It'll be enough to buy me meals for the year, you know, at a Chinese restaurant. Okay, so it's about the subtitle. I had to add a commercial subtitle so you know what it's about. Escape from H-Bomb Island. So it's about a young guy who's a geologist who's going into the Tahiti area to go to the islands that the French are bombing with H-bombs, secretly bombing with H-bombs, poisoning the ocean, killing the people. And this young geologist, who's a kind of roguish guy, goes there and he wants to get some of the coral out of the Mururoa Atoll and bring it back and prove the French are destroying the South Pacific. Okay, so that's the story. It'll be a great movie. Here's how it opens. Chapter 1, Fa'a Airport, Tahiti. That's fiction. Remember, it's fiction. I'm not Leo Loeb. It opens like this. Opening, first line. I hate flying. As the doors of the UTA jet were opened, I rushed to be first. The confinement, the dryness, the closeness to strangers, the rotten food. This usually makes me drink too much. On the 8.5-hour flight from L.A., I drank about 1 liter of wine, a good Merlot from the UTA galley. The acid sweetness of gardenias and the distant chirp of minor birds mixed with jet fuel hit me like a Valium. The winding down whine of the huge engines always relaxes me. The fear of dropping like a rock from 35,000 feet over. Officious French customs officials checked and passed me without a ripple. Tourists, 30 days. A new tattoo added to my paper skin. All the years of banging around the islands had not removed the kick of a new stamp. As the plunger thwacked its ink, Polynésie Française, I felt sure my deception would succeed. All I needed to do was get over to Mururoa in the Tuamotos, steal some coral from the H-bomb atoll, take some pictures, and I'd have some of the evidence I needed. The French had disregarded the pleas of their Polynesian subjects for a long time, before Gauguin died fighting one of their gendarmes. Ever since de Gaulle had begun using them as guinea pigs for his nuclear tests, France had bucked requests to provide health reports to the UN. No health reports had been published for over 20 years. No data on heart attacks, cancer, accidents, tuberculosis, nothing. As far as the civilized world was concerned, Eastern Polynesia was uninhabited. Even the South Africans established and published meticulous health reports on their black population. Le Stuart Hotel Boulevard Palmar, I told the driver, and the tiny cab made its way the few miles into Papeete and the place where Matisse had stayed and painted in the 1930s. I had hoped Alana would be waiting for me with an open bottle and a protective guile. The two-story colonial hadn't changed since the Gauguin days, and I already told you Matisse made it his home during his visit temptation. During his visit to Temptation. Now it was run down, decrepit almost. But I like that kind of place when I'm in the tropics. Partitions, really not walls, hastily put up on the old wide veranda when the ex-merchant's home was sold off and became a hotel. Mosquito nets, not air conditioning. a central bathing area and a little dining room with native wood tables painted over with many layers of cheap redecoration. Quaint would be how the pension appeared if it had been redone in that way by a couple of San Francisco designers as a hobby. This place was just run down. Meliani, she's the front desk girl, recognized me right away. Monsieur Loeb, said her eyebrows before the words, welcome again. She gave me a key. I wondered if this meant Alana had already arrived from New York and was waiting for me. In the past, she had never asked me to sign on until I was already settled, a peculiar Polynesian custom. So that didn't tell me what was most on my mind. And she knew enough not to tell me, that being an admission, and in this case, complicity, in my life. Room 909, your usual upstairs on the left facing the harbor. What BS I go through just to meet someone I enjoy. How was I made that everything satisfying to me was arrived at by circumlocution? If she was there as planned, we could get going the very same day. If not, I'd have to scratch around on my own. Difficult, with my which the French Marines on leave. An empty room, no signs, no baggage, messy bath, or a little wine and cheese spread. Damn, alone in this charming joint for a week, and I'd need a new liver, if not a new brain. I did what I always do to make a sense of ownership. The socks go neatly here, the vitamins up on the bureau away from the heat, light, and moisture. These books for the nightstand, others on the upright dresser. A picture of Sammy, my son, carefully slipped into the mirror frame, shoes lined up under the bed, a trick of mine from tenement days in Manhattan, a way of making order out of chaos. Does God sleep in a youth bed? That's what came to me as I lay down for a stretch. The same cute question I'd asked my mother when I was 5 and given a new bed. No more baby cradle. Her warm laugh reinforced my growing feeling of self-satisfaction. I could make a woman happy with my wit. What a gift. And what hellish rejection lay at the end of those tunnels, mistaken for sunny alpine peaks. Out in the diesel-choked air, I thought of the High Sierras. Snow, a sunny day at high camp in Squaw Valley. Where else could you count on sharp sun, snow, and pure air? The Great Lake below. The last range before the following desert. And here, the white sculpture of God. What else do you want me to call it? True, the loud clatter of skiers on the outdoor deck always rattled me. Something incongruous about skiers and elevation that disturbed me. But the excitement of altitude without airplane, ether without contraption, the glint of pure light always pierced me equally at high snow as it did in the tropics. Clump, clump, the boots of skiers, or rattle, rattle, stink, stink of tropical trucks and buses. Always something low to disturb the high until you got off by yourself and then the hell of isolation to face. Ah, well, mosquitoes in paradise were made to make us remember life before the fall. Effing frog, I screamed, the clunky douchebag brushing my pants as I walked the waterfront streets looking for the people. I knew that a group existed, an underground group called Nobama Pacifique, but where they met or hung out was next to impossible to find. No office, no postal box, no UN address. Who knew? It could even be one American beachcomber left over from the 60s who printed up 50 posters and posted them around town. I'd have to make contact with someone if Alana and I were going to get near enough to the French test site to bring out enough coral to prove they were destroying 150,000 colonized people and eventually the Pacific Ocean. I ordered a small pizza and a liter of white wine at a little cellar just across from the yacht harbor. Run by an expatriate who never smiled, and his Tahitian wife, it comforted me to eat as I like without having to sample the local cuisine out of some false sense of adventure's obligation. After the second glass of Transshipment Blanc, I began to feel myself there in Tahiti, no longer on a couch or in a cafe planning this madness. Alcohol muddled me, made me clairvoyant, felt immortal, sped me to the grave. Another leader, and now a Tahitian mahu, all 6 feet 4 inches of him, sauntered over with the clear, cold carafe wet to my eyes. And I'm going to stop right there. You want to hear more? Yes or no? Of course you want to hear more. It's a good story. It's a good story. It's a very good story. And it's a fictional story. Leo Loeb's Paradise or Escape from H. Palm Island. I'll try to put it up on Kindle in the next few weeks. And I'll make it very cheap, like $1.95, and the manuscript won't be thrown into a incinerator eventually. Oh, someone's reading an old book of mine, has a question. You know what's beautiful about radio right now is I could do anything I want. Because most of you don't want to hear any more about the virus or the disease. You can get it in 2 seconds on the internet. And, you know, you don't know what to believe. And you're sick of hearing about it. You want to be left alone and get back to your lives. And if you get it, you get it. That's what you want. I know what you want. You want to tell the governors to go to hell. You'd like to put them all in prison, all the politicians, all of them. You'd like to lock them all up and let them, ask them if they would like to be locked up for about a year. That's what you'd like to do. I know what you're feeling. You'd rather go out and rehab your, how can you lie? How'd you lose your life like this? How did you give your life up so easily to these these madmen and madwomen? How did you give it up so easily? You say, oh, you're late to the party? Oh, really? Look back at my podcast. See who's late to the party. See who's late to the party. You go to michaelsavage.com. There's a playlist of my podcasts. I don't have them all in front of me. And they all have titles. We do that at the end of the show. We come up with a title. And I think about 2 months ago, I did a title, didn't I, Robert? On the loss of liberty is the greatest tragedy of this virus or something like that. I can't find the date. The last few were things like shutdown activities allowed in California by Newsom. Fascism arrives with a smiley button. Don't use Clorox to cure, you know, that. Oh, here it is. Fauci goes full Nazi. Is the virus? See, I can't read on Cuomo's meatball dinner. Who got the special deals? Here's one. We're all socialists now. That was a month ago. Oh, yeah. Not Bernie Sanders in the White House. No. You know, if Bernie Sanders had, let's say, the election's over and it won, what we've been living through, Bernie could never have gotten away with what we're living through. We're actually living through the Green New Deal. Think about it. Occasional cortex and Bernie Sanders must be smiling every day because we're living through the Green New Deal. But you didn't realize it because it hasn't been announced. Has it?
The Savage Nation. It's Savage on demand.
Ineffective and dangerous, Michael Savage says he will refuse to take a coronavirus vaccination. By Spencer Neal, May 4th, 2020. Washington Examiner, missed by every other site in the country. Top conservative radio host says he will refuse to get vaccinated for the coronavirus if a vaccine becomes available. Dr. Michael Savage's show, Savage Nation, is broadcast on more than, well, it's not, it's 200 terrestrial radio stations, tweeted on Sunday night that he has never taken a flu shot and he does not plan to get vaccinated if coronavirus vaccinations develop. COVID vaccine, Savage tweeted, I'll refuse to take it. It will be ineffective and dangerous. There are now 20 known mutations. I've never taken a flu shot. I refuse to take a COVID vaccine. If the government makes it mandatory, what would you do? Savage holds a PhD in nutrition and lifestyle medicine at the University of California, Berkeley, has struck a sharp contrast with other commentators on the right who have backed the controversial anti-malarial drug hydroxychloroquine to treat coronavirus patients. President Trump declares a national emergency, but Limbaugh continues to spread the panic of complacency, tweeted Savage on March 13th. On April 9th, Savage attacked Dr. Anthony Fauci, claiming the White House task force doctor was working with Microsoft founder Bill Gates to boost demand for a lucrative coronavirus vaccination. Well, there's the article. Read it.
Michael Savage, a host like no other.
Right now, I'll tell you what I want to do. I got a little lower back pain. I never get lower back pain. I've been a very lucky guy. I'm very limber. I'm getting worried. Maybe it's a kidney infection. I don't know where it would come from. Then I thought, what's happening is because the lockdown is sort of over a little bit here and there. I got all this frozen food that I bought during the panic, and I got to use it. So I've been defrosting like shrimp that I bought. I think that's what caused the kidney pain. It probably was bad shrimp to begin with, a fake wrapper, you know, all natural from the Gulf. Probably sewer shrimp from China or some garbage from India or Vietnam or Sri Lanka, real poison. Probably inflame my kidneys. So the reason I'm going to read from God, Faith, and Reason is I hope God, you know, helps me with the kidney pain a little bit. That's the truth. I'm a very spiritual, superstitious kind of guy. So let me read a page from God, Faith, and Reason. It's a funny page in a certain way, but it's very real. And here's what I wrote. Maybe, oh, he's going to preach to us now about God. No, listen to what I wrote, Schmendrick. Just listen. So I'm an Old Testament kind of guy. I believe in the real McCoy. It's a pretty violent book. It's very powerful. Of course, we don't take the Old Testament literally. If we did, we'd probably all be slaughtered by rock throwers. But there is a lot of wisdom in it, based upon common sense in some ways, and logic in some ways. But it's seen by the atheists as a red light to their libido. In plain English, the reason the hedonists hate religion and hate God is because they see them as holding up a red light to their hedonism. It says, you shall not do this and you shall not do that. They want to do anything they want to do. Fornicating with animals is fine because if it feels good, do it. That's, of course, Marin County. Why not do it in the road? That's their modus operandi. And we know what it's led to. I believe there's going to be a rejuvenation of faith in this nation, a return to religion. I've already seen it in some ways. And just because the so-called elites, sneering snot noses in the media, do not show you what is going on, that does not mean it is not going on. And I feel it. In that sense, I'm not a rationalist, I'm an intuitivist. I can feel a change in this country. I believe this long highway of pollution has come to an end and will wind up in the trash heap. The days that led here go back to a pornography case decided by the Supreme Court. That is what dumped the trash into everyone's neighborhood. That's what dumped pornography into everyone's corner. When so-called progressives took the First Amendment to mean that they could pump filth of the lowest and most degrading kind into every mind, that was the beginning of the end of the American morality. Believe me, there is a very big place in this country for a moralist and a reformist to come along, and I don't think we're going to get that out of a politician. And then that's only a two-page entry in God, Faith, and Reason, and then I interspersed a Bible quote from Joshua 10:13, and the sun stood still and the moon stayed until the nation had avenged themselves and their enemies. It's a good book. I really loved it. And it was want to hear something funny about the genesis of that book, God, Faith, and Reason? I told you once, my great publisher, Kate Hartson of Center Books, Center Street Books, a division of Hachette, had come to me soon after Donald Trump got elected in November of 2019. She said, we want to do a fast Trump book. So I said I would write Trump's War. I said it under one condition, Kate. And I said, the condition is you've got to publish my God book, because I've been pestering her for a while to publish my God book. She said, okay, we'll do the God book if you'll do the Trump's War book. So I did both books. Now, the God, Faith, and Reason book was not supposed to be a big seller. It was not thought it was going to be a big blockbuster. Why does everything have to be a blockbuster? What kind of world do we live in? Imagine if Art Blakey was around today and he came around playing that music. Oh, it's not going to be a big seller. No, we don't want to do that one. What's your name, Art? Yeah, go back to Kansas City, Charlie. Take your sacks and go back home. Get a job for the government. So not everything has to be a bestseller to be great or wonderful or worthwhile in any way you want to look at it. So, okay, so Trump's War comes out. It becomes number one in the New York Times list with almost no promotion other than the Drudge Report. And the second day it was on the Drudge Report was only because I got into a fight in Tiburon. Some guy tried to pick a fight with me and blah, blah, blah. Made it into newspapers around the world. So it made it a second day in the Drudge Report because of that. So the book, you know, really took off that one. But God, Faith, and Reason comes out. And I didn't know if it would sell. I figured, hey, I hope it sells 20,000 copies. And it was largely based upon, here's the thing about my archival writings from various sources going back to the 70s, 80s kind of thing. And it was, I pieced it together and put it into a new form with some new material. That's what God, Faith, and Reason was, because I've been looking into religious, spiritual things since I'm a little boy. From the time I was a little kid, I've been looking for God. I haven't found him. I'm still looking. He's still out there. He's silent. I got the silent treatment from my father, so I know how that works. When my father wanted to punish me, you know what he did? He didn't hit me. He didn't talk to me. Now, if you study child psychology, you will come to understand that giving a child a silent treatment is the worst thing you could do to him. Did you know that? A kid would rather be hit by a parent than be treated in that manner. I've studied this. It's horrible. But he was an Old Testament kind of guy. So let's say I did something to disturb him. May he rest in peace. I'm not trying to denigrate him in any way. He did the best he could. He was my father. Without him, I wouldn't be here. I know all of that. I love him. Great man. But when he got mad at me, what he would do is he wouldn't talk to me. And I don't mean just not talk to me. I'd go up and say, Dad, and he'd go like this, finger over the mouth. Don't say a word. It's like a prison. Who does that to a kid? Old Testament. So he did a lot of Old Testament stuff, which I hated. I would never have done that to my kids, and I didn't. As a result, I made my mind never, ever to treat my children that way. Did you do that with your kids? Decide never to be like your own parents. I wonder how many parents, oh, I shouldn't say, I've got pains in myself. How many people have made that decision to never, ever raise their children the way their parents raised them. Probably many of you, you won't admit it, though, because you think you're putting your parents down. But your parents aren't sacred. They're only human beings. I remember when I was having trouble with my parents, I went to a religious person, a woman, a rabbi's wife, wonderful woman. And I said, I don't know what to do. I mean, she's just driving me nuts. And I said, but the Bible says, thou shalt honor thy father and thy mother. She said, well, if you look into the Hebrew, it doesn't mean you should worship them. It means you should honor them, honor that they gave you birth. It doesn't mean you worship them. That liberated me. So there's a lot of wisdom behind the wisdom. And in, some of the wisdom is not in the overt statement itself. It's behind the, you know, it's behind the statement. It's in the white of the letters, not the black of the letters, in a mystical sense. That's been said by mystics before, which is that, you know, the wisdom is in the white of the letters, not in the black of the letters. See, that's like saying, honor thy father and thy mother. Well, the wisdom may not be in the words themselves, but in the backstory of what that actually means, if you can understand what that means. So anyhow, here we are in COVID America. Things are being lifted. I'm defrosting my frozen foods before it all goes bad. And I have kidney pain from the shrimp, I think. That's the long and short of that little jazz side note. I remember once, I'm going to go back again in memory. I was a salesman for a publishing company. I was really young, 21. I had only a bachelor's degree. I was looking for what to do. And I took a job for a major league, one of the biggest publishing companies in the world in New York. That published science textbooks, right? So suddenly I had to play like the Madison Avenue guy. I had to get a suit and shoes, and I was kind of not like that kind of guy. I had to get the suit and the shoes and go to Third Avenue, big building, and conform with, you know, the whole thing, the coffee cart coming around and making believe I was normal and all that stuff, fitting in. Big executives in their offices, they were like demigods. You know, you looked the wrong way at them, you got fired. In those days, they could throw you out for no reason. There was just no justice in the world for workers at that time. If they didn't like you, they fired you. So on one of my trips, I had to go soft sell a textbook series. I think it was in St. Louis, Missouri. And we went over the river that night. I just used to want to go to like music at night on those sales trips. I didn't know what to do with myself. You know, lay in a hotel room and watch television after eating a bad meal. So I'd always try to like go to the gaslight district of a town and just find the jazz club or whatever. I went over the river into East St. Louis, and it was like walking into another universe of African-American musicians coming and playing 2, 3 in the morning. I'd never, ever encountered anything like it. Now, I'm no rube from New York. I mean, I went to jazz clubs like the Village Vanguard, the Village Gate, and all that. But I never saw like the life of the jazz musician in the middle of the night as I did in East St. Louis that night. And it transformed my view of the world. And that, my friends, is the rest of that story. And now let's take some calls of the Savage Nation. What are we going to talk about? Let's go to Sulphur, Louisiana. That's a good name. Edward in Sulphur, Louisiana. Welcome to the Savage Nation. What's on your mind?
Yeah, hi, Dr. Savage. It's like Ghost of Jack Kerouac with that great music. I love it.
Thank you. At least you know who Jack was.
Yeah, my 22-year-old daughter would say super chill.
Or dope. Or it's dope, right?
Right. Well, hey, I with all this nonsense, boy, I sure could use a trip to the South Pacific. So you'd mention this H-bomb short story, and I would definitely buy that if you put that on Facebook.
I'm going to put it up. I'm going to make it $1.95. I mean, I'm not going to get rich from it. I'll sell 1,000 copies. But I just want it to live. You know what I'm saying? I don't want it to be thrown into a garbage can.
Yeah, I know we popped off those first thermonuclear weapons out there, so clearly that.
Oh, yes. And well, there's a real story there. Well, the guy is a kind of adventurer. He's going there to sneak into the Mururoa Atoll, my character, Leo Lope, to steal some coral out from the noses under the French, and prove that they're destroying and decimating the coral atolls and hurting the people with their secret H-bomb tests. So it was a very big story in those days. And I don't think the French have stopped setting off their H-bombs. But I thank you for that call, my friends. One day it'll be on Kindle. We're going to work on it. I have to take, there's a process. I have to convert it from my TypeScript of 30-odd pages into a PDF. Then it gets posted or whatever. I'll have to edit it a little because there's some pretty graphic scenes in there that may not be passed by the Kindle censors. They tell me, no, there's like a Kindle censor. I can't put the sex scenes in there that I made up. I don't know what's wrong with that. Sex is part of life, isn't it? Even invented sex is nothing compared to the garbage that we put on pornography. None of my stuff was pornographic. It was just good. It was sensual. Okay, Dave in Connecticut, line two. You're up on the Savage Nation. What's on your mind, Dave?
Holy cow. I can't believe it. So I got to shut this thing off so I can talk to you.
Go ahead, Dave. We got only a few seconds. Let's hear your statement.
Mike. So I'm a nuclear security guard at a power plant in Connecticut.
Wow.
And there's
right.
And so right now, so you got to figure 50% of the power of Connecticut and 25% of New England comes from this plant. So thousands of us come in. And when it's a shutdown, everybody's like, you know, or people from all over the country are coming in to, and nobody's sick. You know, I mean, we.
Wait. I mean, no one's sick who's coming into New England?
No. At the plant. It's like we see each other every day. And
what do you mean? Your workers, the technicians, engineers, and such, are coming in from all over the country to work in the power plant? No one's sick?
That's what happens. When they refuel the fuel that runs the nuclear plant.
Right. Well, my brother-in-law used to be an engineer in a nuclear power plant. I'm quite familiar with the work.
Yeah, so I'm a non-destructive test engineer, you know? So I'm just saying, it freaks me out how, like, these people come from everywhere to do this, and we see each other, and we all don't know anybody that's, like,
sick,
fairly ill.
Yeah. So what you're saying is there's more to this story than meets the eye. And the simple answer to it is there have been over 60,000 deaths, and most of them have occurred, 50% of them, in New York City. And in very dense population centers around the country, mainly in immigrant-infested areas and in bum-infested areas. Any other questions? Because that's what you would expect in an epidemic. I'll be right back.
Home of borders, language, culture, the Savage Nation.
All right, my friends. Sad to say, the show is coming to an end. It's the way it is. All things start, all things have a middle and then an end. And my literary agent, Ian Kleiner, great guy, read Leo Lowe's Paradise. And he said, Michael, I read it. It's great. And it's Kipling meets Henry Miller. I said, okay, I'm putting it on the jacket of the Kindle edition. Kipling meets Henry Miller. Great line. But look, what we talked about today is serious business. Would you take a COVID vaccine? Savage would refuse it. What would you do? Health passports, how the pandemic is affecting real estate. A faith story. The DOJ is siding with the church, thank God. And who is profiting from these drugs and vaccines? You know, big questions. And if you missed any of the show today, you can catch it all a little later on the podcast, which is a repurposed version of the two-hour radio show without some of these wonderful advertisements. And there it is. Later on. See you later on.
The Westwood One Podcast Network.